Get a head start on 2025 with CNBC's Big January, the hottest tech event, CES, from Las Vegas. The data, the numbers, the jobs report, and meet the future of biotech and pharma at JPM Healthcare. Check out the Amex Golf Tournament from California, Inauguration Day, and the meeting of world leaders in Davos. Plus, the first Fed decision of the year. Get ahead of the game. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
All right, here we go on a Thursday. Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you for the next 4 hours. Coming up a little bit later on in the show today, we're going to be joined by Danan Hughes. That's around 12:10, former Chiefs wide receiver. Of course, you hear him on the broadcast this Saturday afternoon. I guess pregame will start at 9 a.m., a rare Saturday 9 a.m. pregame show.
A noon game. It's a Saturday,
game. Yeah, we've had some noon games in a row here. I think they'll have all noon the rest of the way. It's just
Yeah, but they're Saturday, then Wednesday. Mm-hmm. They're noon, but like... They're not noon, you know, not Sunday at noon.
Of course, all the games, though, right here on your home for the Chiefs, home for KC Sports, 96.5 The Fan. We saw Danan last night at the company party. We'll get to some of our thoughts on the company party, which was really cool last night. We've upped our company party game, I must say. So yeah. We'll get to that.
You know what? Very much so. Also, since you mentioned that the games are right here at 96.5 The Fan, how about a little plea to our audience?
Oh, boy.
This show has been doing pretty well in the ratings, but we could do better. And on Wednesday... The Chiefs game is on our time slot. So look, I'm just going to be honest with you. You got to be listening to the game on the radio. Can you match it up with your TV or something? Help us out. Do you know how few Chiefs games in our rating section we get? None. Zero. They're playing on the weekends. We get one on Christmas Day. Uh-huh. And I'm asking you for a Christmas / Hanukkah present for Gold. Same day, by the way, this year. To listen to 96.5 The Fan that day to the Chiefs game. You know, help us out. Especially if you have a meter. Am I allowed to say that legally?
I have no idea. I have no idea.
Find out.
But no, we appreciate you guys as always for listening to the show. Happy holidays to everybody. This is the last show that Cody and I are doing together until the 2nd because of the holidays. So I can be cliche, but this is the last show of the year for us.
Don't say I'll see you in 2025.
But that is true. That is happening.
I'll still be here for at least
Drew and I will be doing the show tomorrow, and then you're back Monday. But the last time the full show will be together will be today, and then we're back at it on the first of the year. But let's start with what is now becoming more official, even though I think we've all expected this to be the case with reporting, whether it was from Bob or whether it was from Ian Rappaport this whole week, and that is that Hollywood Brown's going to play on Saturday.
Yes.
There's the latest in the last hour or so from Jeremy Fowler also acknowledging that he's going to be activated before the game. And that's where this was trending. And so how important could Hollywood Brown be to this team actually three-peating? Is he the key? I think that's a bit much. I don't think he's the key to the three-peat now. Are they better with him on the field? Definitely doesn't hurt. I want to remember going back. I want us all to remember how we felt about him in training camp and the way Patrick Mahomes talked about his involvement in this offense and what he could provide and how he's a better route runner than people realize. We know he can stretch the field. The role, we don't know what it's going to be Saturday. Maybe it ramps up by the postseason. So they're better with him. Is he the key, though, to a three-peat? Listen to what Dan Orlovsky said on ESPN the other day.
The Chiefs, to win a third straight Super Bowl, are going to need Hollywood Brown to get healthy. Watching this tape yesterday, it is an offense that is struggling mightily. They can't protect, and bringing Tooney out to the left tackle made the offensive line worse, and there is no vertical juice on this offense. They're going to need Hollywood Brown to three-peat.
So I don't think he's the key, though, man, because
he's the key to unlock it. Minnehue was on the defensive side.
Minnehue absolutely has been crazy getting enough pressure on the court. I don't think Hollywood Brown is the key to this. It's still the left tackle. It's still the offensive line and protecting Patrick Mahomes. I'm excited to see what Hollywood can do in addition to Worthy. Now that Worthy's starting to get these underneath drag routes and he continues to improve every week and his production's going up, what does that look like when a guy we thought was going to be the number two receiver for the team all year is now back? And he might be essentially their number four. So the guy that I thought was a two is now their four. That's pretty good depth suddenly in the wide receiver room. I'm excited to see. He's probably the player I'm most excited to see that's missed any time this entire season. Whether it was when Minnehue was out, whether it was when Pacheco was out for a little bit of time. Anybody else that's been injured for weeks and we were excited for them to come back. There's nobody I'm more excited to see play in a Chiefs uniform than Hollywood Brown. But it is not the key to them three-peating. He's a part of it, but it is still the question. Does DJ Humphries eventually play left tackle? Can Joe Tooney improve as a left tackle for this team and protect Patrick Mahomes?
I, obviously that's the bigger key to unlock the actual problems in the offense. But to me, this is not nothing, because we could say, yeah, sure, he's the fourth receiving option behind Travis Kelce. But I don't think it takes like a ton to become the number two again. DeAndre Hopkins is the one. I think they're going to target him the most. Xavier Worthy has been competing for that all of a sudden, which is a big shift and change in where they've been. So, okay. But like, for him to become co-two, co-three, like, it's not all that crazy. And to all of a sudden have four receiving options that actually work, to me, it suggests that if the offensive line figures it out for even half a second, they go from functional offense, which happens if they just get competent offensive line play from DJ Humphreys when he comes back, to explosive offense with Hollywood Brown. Because Hollywood, DeAndre Hopkins, Xavier Worthy, two man beaters, two zone beaters, means you get to kind of play the defense however. DeAndre Hopkins and Travis Kelce beat you when you're in a soft zone. Xavier Worthy and Hollywood Brown beat you when you are trying to play man-to-man. And you can operate kind of dissecting teams in that way. So, yeah, I am excited to see what Hollywood Brown has. The biggest problem you and I have discussed is, will I even get to see what Hollywood Brown has if Patrick Mahomes doesn't have time? Will I even get to, like, know what that looks like or feels like? Because, like, the conversation, I think somebody added us on Twitter, so I didn't hear the conversation. I don't know exactly what C-Dot said. But somebody was suggesting that C-Dot had said that Travis Kelce's washed. And my answer would be, like, can it not be that Patrick Mahomes has no time to throw the football and that's why his numbers are deflated? His numbers could easily be deflated because the entire offense's numbers are deflated. The points per game are down. Yards per game are down. Yards per target are down. Yards per average depth of target is down. Couldn't Travis Kelce's numbers just be down as an effect of the offense's numbers are down? And if he had time, Travis Kelce would look like normal Travis Kelce?
Like most things, it's probably a little bit of both, right? It's a combination of things. It's poor protection of Patrick Mahomes. It's Mahomes hasn't been as sharp at times this year. Yes, Travis is older. Like, it's probably everything coming together that has led to certain results for this offense. You know, ultimately, it's the areas that they can improve. It's not even like the entire offense. It's, can they get better in the red zone? Can they be a better team on crucial third downs? Well, they've already been the number one team percentage wise. That's not the problem. It's the red zone, I think, ultimately for this offense, and whether or not that is something that they can improve on if they have another explosive player like Hollywood Brown on the field. But you just got to start with the left tackle and protecting your quarterback. The reason why Patrick Mahomes is dealing with an ankle injury is because there wasn't good protection on that 4th and 3.
Yeah, and that's, again, inevitably the problem with Hollywood. But is it he can't, you know, we don't know if he can get protected. I will say we probably overshot. So, like, we thought Tooney held up pretty well in the first half, pretty bad in the second half against Myles Garrett. We talk about DJ Humphreys getting comfortable or Wanye or and all these other players. Am I not allowed to give Joe Tooney a little grace in the learning left tackle department? Am I allowed to give him than one game to get better hypothetically at left tackle rather than just assuming whatever I got against the Cleveland Browns is the best he's got? He's been a pretty good offensive lineman in his career, and he's learning, in my opinion,
he's been consistently
a brand new position.
One of the best left guards in football. I mean, frankly, an all-time left guard. I know guard is not the offensive line position everybody focuses in on, like a left tackle or a right tackle, but he's been one of the best guards to play over the last decade plus in the league easily. And we know there's a reason, though, why he's not a left tackle. Like, so I think when we assess his play at left tackle, we got to remember that that's not his position. But there's also, as Nate Taylor told us earlier in the week from The Athletic, when he joined us in studio or on the phone, I guess, this week, there's a reason why he doesn't play left tackle.
Yes.
And we can get into like the nerdy stuff, but there's a reason why the Chiefs, when they're drafting a left tackle, and I understand
you have 38 inch arms.
There's
or
certain arm length that they like for their left tackles. Okay,
I know we
joke about. Yeah,
I don't remember the length.
It gets a little nerdy, but there's a reason why they look at those measurables.
When you look at but I will say the one thing I do think Hollywood Brown can unlock. If he plays this week, and let's say he plays 20 snaps, you and I both don't think he's going to get a full workload this game, especially with Wednesday right behind it. And wide receiver has been way less the problem this year than the offensive line for why the offense looks broken. He is a qualified and proven deep threat, though. Like, Xavier Worthy is still trying to work through some of the kinks on that. Some of it's Patrick Mahomes. I had mentioned in the last game, I got no idea where that throw, and people were blaming the wind and trying to make excuse making. He missed him by a mile. It wasn't particularly close. So the last one was definitely on him. But Xavier Worthy's run into his own problems on when and how to run the deep routes the right way. Hollywood Brown's a proven deep threat. So if there's a, they got a better chance at hitting a deep ball in this game than they've had in 2 months, and a better chance in the week after that and the week after that. And you and I have both said that if there's ever as many games as they win now, if they in any game, in addition to playing their normal football game, complete a 60-yard touchdown, well, then it's a wrap. Game's definitely over then. Like, they're winning a football game in which they actually complete a 60-yard touchdown. They're winning every game without it. If they find the deep ball again, if that becomes a part of their offense at any point, there's a better chance with Hollywood Brown.
Yeah, I mean, he's shown that he can do it in his career. And, you know, you wonder about still the timing. You know, that's the thing. I know they got a ton of preseason OTA work and training camp work together, Mahomes and Hollywood Brown. But that was August. And so what's that timing like? This week he's back on the practice field. We know it sounds like he's going to be activated. What's that look like? They've had light practices this week. So how much more of a, more than a walkthrough has it been? What's the timing right like, I should say, for Hollywood Brown with Mahomes? That's so crucial. Maybe you don't feel it's as big because he's been in the league for a while and he's not a rookie. But I still wonder, what's that? You know, if we've acknowledged that the deep pass, the timing's been off with other receivers or Mahomes is overthrown, well, what's that going to look like for a guy that hasn't been on the field since August?
Don't know.
So that's what we're all going to find out. I'm excited, though. I truly mean that. Out of all the players that have, I'm not saying he's going to have the biggest impact, but of all the players that have missed games this year, and he's missed the most, unfortunately, he's the player I'm most excited to see. He's on a, you know, he's a flashy
more
position.
Than Pacheco,
he's a
more
flashy
than
player. Like, yeah. all of that is a wide receiver, for crying out loud, that has the opportunity to stretch the field. There, so I'm very, very excited to see, but expectations should be, you know, reasonable for a guy that hasn't played all year. And I'm with you. I think we see, in what, 20% of the snaps in this game for from Hollywood right. Brown, something like that.
Meanwhile, since the offensive line has been struggling, we actually finally got a team who decided to say the quiet part out loud. He decided that even though we all know the Chiefs offensive line is struggling, he would take it as a personal mission to settle that score. That is Tim Settle, of course, from the Houston Texans, the defensive end.
Who's that?
He plays for the Texans.
Tim Settle. I'll be honest. Until this week, I did not know who the heck that
was.
You
know who he is now, and I can Tim assure you that the people inside the Chiefs locker room do too.
Tim Settle, he's 27 years old. He is a defensive tackle for the Houston Texans. He's on a defensive line that obviously
has some
big names, Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter. He does have five sacks this year for the Houston Texans, and he was speaking to the media in Houston.
I definitely see this O-line. It definitely has its leap holes, and it definitely has its their struggles, but, you know, I feel like that we can take advantage of that. You know, we got an elite D-line. You know, I feel like Pat's a little banged up, so I don't know if he's going to play or not, but I hope he's mobile enough because we coming in Arrowhead.
You guys plan to get after that?
Yeah, for sure. Pat better make a good decision. I ain't making no threats. I'm making promises.
Thank you, Tim Settle. Thank you. I mean, on behalf of Chiefs Kingdom, thank you very much for saying that out loud. Like, what he said isn't completely inaccurate. We all know the O-line has holes, but I love when an opposing player going into a Chiefs game decides to open his mouth a little bit. It's terrific because we know, we absolutely know, because we have enough evidence over the years now, that whether it's Mahomes directly, whether it's Bobby Stroop, his trainer, passing the message along, and this offensive line, maybe this is also what they need. You know, we've heard a lot of you at times on the text line say they don't have somebody to kind of light a fire under the ass of some of these guys, right? Here we go. There you go, offensive line. The guy you're going up against just called your ass out. He said that he thinks he can take advantage of what you guys have been doing out there. And I get why he feels that way based on how you performed. But I love that. It's one thing when everybody can see it on film. It's another when a player to the media that you're going to face off with is saying, oh, yeah, we got these guys. We know they've got some holes there. We're gonna be able to take advantage of that. Even if it's true, this is why a lot of coaches don't want their guys saying that kind of stuff in game week. The last time a defensive player said anything about shutting down Mahomes or whatever, it didn't go well for them. It never has. So I love this. It makes me feel even better about this game on Saturday. And you can say that's silly. Well, we've just seen it time and time again. Time and time again. So I love it. Thank you, Tim Settle Jr.
Look, the offensive line knew they weren't playing well. But the second you tell them those guys are losers and they can't stop you, this is going to be the best offensive line performance of the season, right? Like, I mean, it's on the books now. Tim Settle couldn't help
it better
himself
be with his ankle, with Mahomes' ankle like that. It better be.
Honest to God, it'd be pretty good timing for it.
That should also motivate them.
Yeah. Admittedly, it'd be like, give your life. And I'll say this: if I was a Chiefs offensive lineman, knowing his ankle status and the fact he's got to play on Wednesday, risk the holding call. Okay, If it means Patrick Mahomes is standing at the end of the play, go ahead and hook him. I'm just gonna that juice is worth the squeeze.
It's like the pass interference where you know it's a touchdown.
Yeah, don't let him hit Mahomes. Thanks. If you got beat, just go ahead and go for that hold. You know what? Just that one might be worth it. But yeah, I just don't understand these teams because the Chiefs have a very, very, very long history of shutting up people who say things like Burrowhead or they're a weak-ass offensive line. When you bring those things into the public, eventually the Chiefs usually keep your mouth shut after that. Because, and you've said this before, other teams feel this way. Teams don't like this. Coaches do not like this. Coaches do not like you saying things like this. They would prefer you operate under the Andy Reid model. And look, Justin Reid found out the hard way a couple of years ago. Remember when he had a little something to say? Have you heard Justin Reid talk about another team that way since he had some trash talk and then he got cooked? And then it was like he kept his mouth real quiet in the postseason run in which they eventually won the Super Bowl and he played great. That goes back to this whole thing. Tim Settle just opened Pandora's box, which is, I mean, fine with us, Gold. I don't care. Do you? Sounds good.
Oh, I love it. I love the fact that Tim Settle Jr. said that. Tomorrow we're going to have someone from Houston on the show. I'll ask our guest about this comment and what the reaction was in Houston to it. Maybe it's something that's only being reacted to in Kansas City. I don't know.
I am curious, I guess, with Houston, and we'll talk about it in a minute, how they're viewed. You should ask him because I'm curious how they view them there. Because they were supposed to be one of the big dogs. Come play up in the big leagues, right? With the Ravens and the Bills.
It just hasn't been there.
Yeah, the vibe's not.
They were the sexy offseason pick for a lot of people. You know, CJ Stroud was a very, very popular MVP pick. He had a career rookie season. And I still think he's incredible, and he can still do some really, really special things on the field. But that offensive line in Houston hasn't been as good. You know, they're fortunate they're in a weak AFC South, and so they're going to win 10 games, probably maybe 11, and that'll win the division pretty comfortably based off of the Colts and how bad the Jags have been and how bad the Titans have been for quite some time now. So I think the Houston Texans were a lot of people's pick to take that next step. And as you said, you know, this matchup alone on Saturday was probably on paper a lot bigger QB matchup-wise, mm-hmm. even though it has major ramifications.
I think somebody brings up a good point, though, real quick, from the 913. I think it's ridiculous to say the reason the play better is because the player says something negative about the line. I think that's true because...
That's human psychology.
I know, but from the jump, Cody, I've said this. I want to see Patrick Mahomes get in the face of the offensive lineman. Mahomes should be the reason why they're amped up.
Yeah,
not because whatever his name is said something. Your quarterback is getting hit more than he ever has been. They got... To me, I think that's enough for you to get called out by Heck, by Andy...
I would just say in the meeting room, I'm not sure that's not happening. And I don't blame you for saying that, but like the human condition is exactly this. Drew, yesterday I called you a lightweight and you were immediately ready to enter a drinking contest with me. Like immediately. True.
By the way, how many did you have last night?
We're going to get to the company holiday party.
We'll talk about it in just a second and I'll confirm the number of drinks I had versus you had. We can discuss that. But when we like, that's the human condition. They say you suck and you're like, I don't suck. You suck.
Yeah.
And you just immediately want to prove it to them. And yeah, sometimes you'd be like Tom Brady's mode was he was going to throw an iPad towards you and cuss you out, your own teammate, for not holding up your end of the bargain. That's never been Mahomes' strategy. Not publicly and not often. I'm not saying he's never done it, but not often. And he's got 3 Super Bowl rings. So whatever he's doing internally, externally, his strategy for motivating in-house is working.
The reason why I do buy into it to a certain extent is it's some players. You bring up Brady, I'll bring up Mahomes, whether it was Michael Jordan, the last dance documentary, where he would manufacture things. Like nobody really actually said anything, but Michael Jordan would take anything as a slight, and he was able to create it himself. Some of the great ones always did that. There's some players that are not able to manufacture it. They need to have it actually there in front of them. Thank you, Tim Settle. And so that's what I'm getting at in terms of this offensive line for Kansas City on Saturday.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be like vehement, like you suck or whatever. Like it has to be like, hey, wake up, let's go. Like we can do this. Like I want to be able to see it.
Maybe they just don't show it as much with him. I don't know.
It's definitely not.
He doesn't like.
It might be because of that, but also, I mean, they made a point to say with Lamar Jackson in particular, like his leadership in terms of like he's going to the offensive linemen, like talking to each of them individually on the sideline. We just see Mahomes like sitting there, and I know that there's a lot of quarterbacks, but I'd like to see if he's getting his ass kicked to say, hey, like to walk up to his guys.
Can you keep me on my feet?
Yeah, please. Like when he got mad at Wanya and wanted him benched, essentially, I wanted him to go on the sideline and before that.
That's
like
not
a
who
week
he's going to be, though, man.
I know, but he still
like,
did
like,
it.
Like,
I
can
mean,
you wake
know.
Up, please?
Yeah, I mean, he's not. That was his, what we saw with Wanya a couple weeks ago after that frustration. That's his, the, as much as you're going
to
see with
the
player.
But it was directed at Andy, not to a player. I want to see him talk to Wanya. Like, yeah. Dude, you need to wake the hell up.
He's not going to show his teammates up. Like, he's just, that's just not, and I understand why. That's not, I mean, and we all know the post-game comments that he, you know, he's not going to call any one player out and put and throw them under the bus. That's not his style, and I get it. That's how he's been since he's been in the league. That's not how he's going to go about his business.
No, not typically. And again, can't argue with the success rate of his current business.
I would say so. So yes, last night we had our company holiday party.
Nice party.
We talked about it yesterday, and it was, we've upped our game. I mean, the holiday party was very nice. It was actually at Arrowhead last night in there, the Bud Light locker room area that they have down there.
Slash the actual locker room. The
locker room was opened up, and so it was our entire cluster. Like, we've been in there to cover the team, but there's a lot of people that have just never been in the locker room before from sales department or whatever. And so it was a really nice party. I think we all had a great time last night, but the story going in was some beef between you and Drew, because to start the show 5 seconds in yesterday, you called Drew a lightweight, and Drew was, again, he was pissed immediately once you called him out.
I think Drew
definitely took that personally based on last night. You left before Drew did at the party. You just kind of left and didn't say goodbye.
I left right at the end of the party, pretty much the same time as Drew. I was just in a different section of the building.
Cody was talking about the co-rec when we left, because we had talked about that. We were like, Cody left early. I was like, I haven't seen him. And then
I'm pro Irish goodbye, to be fair.
Yes. Cody was talking at the co-rec. I don't know how long, but Cody was by the co-rec.
What was the drink of choice for you last night?
Cranberry vodka Sprite.
Cranberry vodka
Sprite. I made sure not to mix anything. I made sure to just stay in that
lane.
And
how many of those did you consume?
I had three, but I could have had more. I was good. I mean,
we all could have had more.
Yeah.
I had four drinks, so I did not rush out the door.
Were you feeling good?
I wasn't like drunk or anything. I was fine. I mean, like, I wasn't like...
It was on a Wednesday night. We had to drive home.
How many did you have?
I just had two beers.
No, you had three beers. I brought you a third beer.
I had three beers.
I was about to say, hold on, wait. I'm pretty sure I brought you your third beer. Yes. So you had three drinks, just like Drew. You just had beer instead. I was drinking bourbon and ginger beer. And then I switched. My fourth drink was a beer because I was like,
do you think Drew is a lightweight still, or would you like to retract your comments?
I feel like the last night was a bad litmus test.
We didn't interact enough.
That.
I can't.
Yeah. I feel like last night was a bad litmus test.
Yeah. I think we got to do this a proper way. We got to go to like Kelly's in Westport on a Saturday night and go drink for drink. That's a proper way to figure out, you know, which way we're going to, you know. Who can last longer in
apparently,
this department?
Okay, so somebody on the text line. So we have beef with the Midday Show, or maybe I do, just in particular. Carrington called me a lightweight as well. And I think this is BS.
You think you got a bad reputation?
You guys are ganging up on me. And listen, I think Carrington...
You weigh like 160 pounds?
I weigh 20 pounds less than that. I'm like 145, dude.
Okay, jeez.
145.
Okay, so you weigh 145 pounds, and I think you drink like once a week. I think you'd be a lightweight just by nature. Not by choice, necessarily. I think some of this is just a physical part.
Sure. I think for 140 pounds, I think I handle my own where... I had
bang
three
for
drinks.
Your buck, is that what it is?
I had three drinks, and I was fine.
Yeah, that's a pretty good sign.
I can... Look, I was talking to Kramer about this. I don't drink beer. I hate beer. I can't stand beer, any sort of kind. But if you give me a bottle of like strawberry lemonade Svedka, I'll drink just straight. I'll drink it. You know,
such a specific one.
You can call me a lightweight, but like I drink some hard liquor and I'm good. Like I'm good to go.
Carrington rolled in like an hour and a half late to this party, and then demanded that we all do like team camaraderie. He wanted a team photo. He then tried to coax me into the bar so we could all do a big cheers, which is not a thing, by the way. Just people don't do that at holiday parties or as a group.
He was celebrating. I don't know.
He was having a good time, Cody.
It's not a wedding. Why are we doing a cheers?
Because
I didn't
he's happy
go to that.
That we're all
did
together.
You guys do the cheers?
No. Well,
no
we didn't. You
think
came
we did.
For the photo. He wanted us to take the photo,
photo
and I
to
said, sure. What's wrong with that?
I took the photo. I didn't do the cheers.
Reluctantly, you took the photo.
I did reluctantly take the photo. I was just confused. He said, we should all be a team. We should be together. I was like, I guess.
I had a good time. It was
a good party.
I think everybody had a good time last night.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Nothing. There were no standout moments of embarrassment.
I was able to take a picture of Mahomes' locker.
I will say.
Yeah, it was nice.
In attendance.
Yeah, did you see Drew's tweet?
I did see. He sent a photo.
Did you guys see this?
He did take a photo at Mahomes' locker.
So we were in the locker room, and yeah, you could take a photo in front of a locker or whatever. Let me pull up the exact wording. I don't want to misquote you. Okay.
Thank you.
Let me make sure I get the right quote. Here it is. Drew B. Nix on Twitter. Drew said, quote, say what you will. Pretty sweet to see the second best quarterback in the league's locker. And Drew's just sitting there with his hands up in the air, sitting in Patrick Mahomes' locker.
But that photo can still be used against you if and when the next time Cincinnati and the Chiefs play against each other. Mahomes game-winning drive, people are just going to send you that photo. Like, they don't need to use your caption for it. They're just going to use it against you.
Yeah, it's a good old... I'm just trolling.
I get you wanted to sit in a seat of someone that has won a ring before. I get it. I totally get it. You couldn't go into Cincinnati's locker room and do the same
thing,
Drew.
Good. It felt really good sitting in... Well, I could sit at Orlando Brown Jr.'s locker. Excuse me.
There's not an Orlando Brown Jr.'s locker in Kansas City anymore.
No,
you can't go to another team.
In Cincinnati is what I'm saying.
You can't go to another team. He didn't win the ring in Cincinnati. He didn't win the ring in Cincinnati.
That is true.
You're going to sit in an offensive lineman's locker when we're talking about quarterbacks?
No, I would not sit at Orlando Brown Jr.'s locker.
From the 913, it's official. Cody is not a team player.
Definitely.
That's what it sounded like last night.
I hung out, I drank with people, I chatted, I was there as late as Drew, even though misinformation was being spread.
That is true.
I was there to almost 9 o'clock. You know what, at the Coat Rat, I got, you know who happened to be in attendance?
Who?
A student of mine from my class this previous semester.
So you're partying with your students now?
Not.
Okay.
I don't know, partying with my students is the way I put it. Plus, they graduated, they told me, so problem solved.
That student... will be the one we picked to come in studio to find out how Professor Tapp did this
semester.
I'll
be honest, it's probably not going to go great for me because the very first, I'd said, how'd the semester go? And she said, fine. And then she openly told me to my face she took my class for an easy A. And that's insulting to my, I'm trying to teach you things. Yeah. I'm trying to help you learn.
I know, but you yourself have said, all you got to do is show up and do a little work and you pass the class. So that's an easy A.
Yeah, people are calling you out, Cody, on the text line. They're saying, Cody, you're 40. Who cares how much people can drink? You're a man. You're 40.
I just called him.
Up next.
No, that's something you called me a name. Excuse me.
Up next, let's talk more about this matchup and how we viewed the Chiefs-Texans a couple months ago compared to now, and a wild report out of New York about an owner that is getting in the way. We're just getting started on a Thursday. Almost had to separate Drew and Cody during the break. You guys should definitely watch the video stream. Video stream today. I mean, you never know what you'll see if you're watching on Facebook, Twitch, YouTube as well. You guys can hit us up, as you already do, on the Jay Stylefland Host Service text line, 913-586-7965. Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. We'll get to a bizarre report out of New York around the Jets, and I guess that's a sentence that maybe in its own right is not very bizarre based off of how they've been running that franchise, but we'll get to that in about 8 minutes or so. I think on Saturday, though, as the Chiefs are taking on the Texans, it's big because we know Kansas City needs to go 2-1 down the stretch to get the one seed unless Buffalo were to drop again. We know it's more and more intriguing because Hollywood Brown now is making his debut, it looks like, on Saturday. But before the season started, we thought Stroud and Mahomes had a chance to be the Thursday night opening game. We thought Stroud and Mahomes, this game could be an AFC title game preview, and I guess technically it could. It sure doesn't feel that way because the Texans are basically locked into the number 4 seed. They're already the AFC South champs. Barring a real surprise, they're not going to move up to a 3 seed. They're already eliminated from any other seed. So they're a 4 seed team that's going to play the 5, it looks like, in the wild card round. Right now, that would be a team like Baltimore. If the Steelers were to lose to Baltimore this weekend, all of a sudden it's the Steelers maybe going to Houston. This felt like it was going to be a much bigger QB matchup because neither QB's playing all that great.
No,
and
it's
both
not
because of O-line play.
Yes, because their offensive line is very bad. I guess when we previewed the season and we looked at all 17 games this year, I thought this was one of the 4 biggest matchups, especially once you figured out what time of year. Remember how much we factored that in? Ooh, man, December. Stroud, Mahomes, this could be a conversation for the number 1 seed is for sure a statement said on this show. Because at the time, we're like, they play in the terrible AFC South. They could be just like we thought the Jags the year before. Hell, man, the Texans could be fighting for that 1 seed. They're no better, in my opinion, than the 2 teams playing tonight, the Chargers and the Broncos. They're in the same realm of that. I won't even, don't give me this as a future problem in the playoff. Nah, this is just a team. Can they beat the Chiefs? Are they good enough to beat them the same as the Chargers and the Broncos are? Sure. Do I fear them come playoff time in a rematch, even if the Texans get the win here? I do not. Not the same level. Well, not zero, but not the same level I would fear the Bills, the Ravens, the teams who have deservedly put themselves into the conversation separate from the others. And as much as the Ravens and the Texans have the same record, the Texans are one of the highest rated DVOA teams of all time. Their record does not match the level of play they put together on offense because Lamar Jackson has been incredible. C.J. Stroud's been whatever, fine. Their defense is fine. Their offensive line stinks. Nico Collins hasn't quite been the same since the injury. Like, I don't know. I just thought this was going to feel like a bigger matchup. And it's Thursday, and we're just now talking about the matchup, so it's lost some juice.
I will say, if we're asking how do the Texans become really dangerous again, is that scenario still out there? It only is if Nico Collins and Stroud continue to build this connection that they had, you know, last year prior to the injury, and we have started to see the Texans offensively look a little bit better, but it's not nearly as potent as it was a year ago. Tank Dell has so far just not been the same player as he was at times in his rookie season, and whether that's the injury, whether it's the unfortunate incident in the offseason where he was in the wrong place, wrong time. Remember, he got shot in the offseason, and so who knows, maybe that threw off his entire regimen, and that'd be understandable. But they're not nearly the same dynamic offense as they were a year ago. And in large part, it's because of the O-line. But Nico Collins would be the reason if all of a sudden we woke up and they were in the AFC title game somehow and they were playing Kansas City or Buffalo or whatever, it would be because I think Nico Collins suddenly became the big problem that he was last year. I think that's it. But at a 9-5 team, they are an average, slightly above average football team. Now, that doesn't mean that they're not capable of giving the Chiefs a run for their money, like a lot of teams have done throughout this entire season. Do I feel like this is the same as last week where they're going to force five turnovers or something?
No,
of course
they're
not
the Browns.
They're not a three-win Browns team. But there's a big gap between nine-win Houston and teams like the Steelers, the Ravens, the Chiefs, and the Buffalo Bills. To me, there's a reason why they're going to be the four seed. And this will be another example of...
And we'll be picking them to lose to the Ravens probably
I think
wild card weekend.
Now, maybe people will change their opinion if they beat the Chiefs on Saturday. But yeah, I think whoever the five seed is, there's a very good chance it's a popular upset. You know, even if they're favorites, like I don't know if there's a chance for the Texans at home as the four seed or underdogs if they're playing five seed Baltimore or five seed Pittsburgh. There'll be a lot of people picking the Texans to lose in the first round. They've got a chance to change that narrative starting Saturday.
What's funny is they started 5-1. They had beaten Buffalo. They had beaten Indy. They lost to Minnesota pretty bad, but like they seem like a team who had like had it going, right? They were beating some teams. They've won two of their last five, three of their last seven. Like, part of it is just the way that they're playing right now. In their last seven games, they've lost to the Packers, the Jets, the Lions, and the Lions game was close, and Tennessee. They've beaten Dallas, Jacksonville, and Indy. And so there's just nothing on paper that makes you be like, there it is. They got it all put together. And yeah, Collins had a good, like, statistical game last week against Jackson, or 2 weeks ago against Jacksonville. So it's not to say that there's nothing going on there, but like, I don't know. They just don't look like a team that scares you in the same way. And I apologize. It's three out of the last five they won because they beat Miami last week. But I don't know. I feel like it's pretty, I think they're locked in to the four because they're not, like, you'd be like, if you look at the record for the NFC North, technically they should be able to move up to the three, but their last three games are at Kansas City, against Baltimore at home, and then at Tennessee. So, I mean, in the next 2 weeks, we'll make our decisions about whether or not we think the Texans are a threat. And I'm just telling you, I don't think they are. As bad as the Kansas City Chiefs offensive line has played, the Houston Texans offensive line has rated worse all season. Because the one thing that is the Chiefs' saving grace is they're not bad everywhere on the offensive line. They're bad at left tackle. They're average at right tackle. And they're elite in the middle, whether you want to believe it or not, because of the amount of pressure. You just can't hide left tackle problems. Makes the whole offensive line look worse. That's what this comes down to. Houston's entire offensive line stinks. That's the difference.
Coming up in 20 minutes, we'll get to a few things that we want to see on Saturday. Maybe it is, of course, the left tackle play, but some other elements that I think Chiefs fans would like to see on Saturday against the Texans in particular. But let's go to New York for a second. We know the Jets.
Can we call Vinny on for this one?
I wish this story came out before Vinny Pasquantino joined us yesterday on the show as our VNFL insider, and I'm sure next week maybe we'll catch back up with him before the holiday. But the Jets have been laughable for many, many, many years for a variety of reasons on the field and off the field. This one would qualify as an off the field embarrassment and why, hey, you can go find the perfect head coach all you want. You're still screwed if you're a Jets fan. Sorry. Here's why. Diana Rossini of The Athletic, who has been all over reporting on the Jets, very connected within that organization, either via player or others. This is not fake. This is one of those where you have to check and make sure it's not a parody, but it is not. So
She put out a new piece
with Mike Silver as well. It actually was in the New York Times, but also through The Athletic. And it talks about their owner, Woody Johnson. The expert is that Douglas, who was their GM at the time, told the Broncos that Woody Johnson did not want to make the trade for Jerry Jeudy, who's having a great year in Cleveland.
Yes.
Because Woody Johnson felt Jeudy's player rating in the NFL video game Madden was not high enough. That is from The Athletic, Zach Rosenblatt, Diana Rossini, and Mike Silver on Woody Johnson basically nixing an offseason trade for Jerry Jeudy. You have your owner now twice in the last month quoted, or reported as he wanted to bench Aaron Rodgers for Tyrod Taylor. Now there's a report that he nixed a trade for a talented wide receiver that could have helped them, Jerry Jeudy, because his son was playing Madden and they saw the Madden rating and it wasn't good enough.
And so there was another player they turned out because his awareness rating in Madden was too low.
This is how we're running franchises. This is where sometimes if you want to say like, oh, you don't know what the hell you're talking about when someone says, hey, I think I could do better than certain people, and I have never been an owner or GM or whatever. This is why people say that. Your owner is going off of Madden ratings?
That's wild.
My 10-year-old nephew can do that if that's the case. We're just going to sign players and nix players based off
because
of
his son
Madden
named
ratings.
Brick Johnson. Brick. He's trusting Brick
that's
Johnson.
An unbelievable name as well.
I mean, Brick and Jack Johnson are making decisions for the New York Jets instead of actual qualified NFL people. There's also stuff in here that said Brick and Jack Johnson would just like bring guests to the locker
room. Jack Johnson's involved too.
It said that they would bring like guests in. Like he'd just bring like his girlfriend and be like, oh, this is the Jets locker room. The players are there. And he's like, and then the kids mm-hmm. who were also players would just like openly criticize players in the locker room. Just kids. I mean, I would have quit that team so fast. Are you kidding? No wonder Bill Belichick has been burying Woody Johnson publicly for like 2 straight years. Yeah, I think probably for good reason, man. This is insane. Picking a player based on a Madden rating is hilarious. It's pretty hilarious, right?
Blocking a trade? Because
I don't want Jerry Jeudy. His Madden rating's a little too low.
His rating's only, 73 or whatever. I only trade for guys that have 80 on their Madden rating.
That means he shouldn't be drafting a quarterback ever again because their Madden rating is going to be really, really low.
I mean, just what I meant. Because, in that same story, thinking of quarterbacks, Mike White, we know, was the quarterback for a little while. And there's also reporting in this. And these are, these are respected, well-known reporters. This isn't some random blog. Or whatever. These are connected reporters that have a history of being correct in their reporting. And there's a story that they tell that essentially Mike White threw an interception and it officially eliminated the Jets from the playoffs a couple years ago. And Mike White was mad at himself. He throws his helmet down in the locker room and then he goes to the showers to get ready. Normal stuff that you would expect from a player. The story says that Woody Johnson, the owner of the Jets, reportedly said, you should, I don't have the exact quote for it, basically, You should throw your effing helmet. You suck. Other players hear this and gets back to Mike White, and the owner eventually apologizes to Mike White about this.
I mean, there is no fix. And this is like the one thing that's just like we don't probably talk about enough. There's nothing you can do to fix bad ownership. Unless the only thing you can do to fix like truly bad ownership is a truly generational player. Like LeBron fixed the Cavs. Truly bad ownership.
Dan Gilbert.
And he fixed the Cavs in spite of that. That's the old, like, generational player is maybe the only thing you can do. Like, the Panthers are never going to be good under the current ownership. The Jags are never going to be good under the current ownership. The Jets are never going to be good under the current ownership. If you have wretched owners, you are unfixable
as
an organization. No one can save you.
Yeah, I think... I don't know if those are all alike. I get your point. I don't know if all three of those owners deserve to be in the same category.
I don't know if Shad Khan's been letting his kids pal around. I don't know if he has, Brick Khan telling everybody to drop players based on
Woody Madden. Johnson's in his own category here. I understand the concerns around Dave Tepper, who is way too involved already, and he's trending down that path. We'll see now with Canales and now that Bryce Young's playing better football if he lets them work and lets them do their job. Football people do their job. Woody Johnson's just in a completely different category. We're talking about an owner blocking trades because of Madden ratings, for crying out loud. That's insane. That's crazy stuff. It's why some Jets fans are hoping he becomes an ambassador again so he's away from the team.
For 4 years?
Yeah.
He was
already the ambassador. The Jets fans are legitimately hoping he becomes an ambassador to, what was it, Italy, I think?
I don't remember.
Yeah. I don't know if that's happening or not.
Are you going to become an ambassador anytime soon?
To what country?
I don't know. Is there one you'd turn down?
Sure.
I can't believe it. Like, they, and this goes back to the whole thing, they let Aaron Rodgers be de facto GM. with Woody Johnson running Madden checks to confirm the rest of the deals. They just let him pal around with, I mean, this had no chance of success ever. The fact that anybody, and look, retrospect helps a lot. The fact that anybody ever thought this was going to work now in retrospect is hilarious. Like, if you go back in a time machine when that trade happened, we're like, well, because we had a conversation on the show, like, the Jets, man, real threat. Aaron Rodgers, woo! Come on. That was a joke from the beginning. And if we had known all this, we would have known it was a joke from the beginning. And I knew Woody Johnson wasn't a good owner. And I knew bad owners do stupid things. And bad GMs do stupid things. I had no idea that there was an owner out here vetoing trades over Madden ratings. Because some 27-year-old with a clipboard on a sideline randomly deciding Jerry Jeudy was a 77 wasn't worth trading for now.
Do you want to talk about someone else that is not doing themselves any favors in terms of their judgment around their program, in this case, Doug Gottlieb. You said you enjoyed the back and forth a couple days ago, him and Adam Schefter.
Yeah, I did. I liked
where Schefter put out the tweet about Sac State and basically, did they really have a $50 million NIL fund and all this? And Gottlieb called him out for pushing agent propaganda, basically. And there's some truth to that. But then Adam Schefter sends a tweet back. It was like, why don't you focus on your basketball team who's winless in Horizon League play, Wisconsin, Green Bay, and all this. Then, fast forward to yesterday, Doug Gottlieb, it's an afternoon basketball game. Wisconsin, Green Bay's hosting a school that I've never heard of. It's D2 Michigan Tech, I guess.
I don't think he'd ever heard of them either, based on his reaction.
So this is what he said the day before they played Michigan Tech.
Part of the reason I want to play better teams is, like, it's 2 degrees outside, snowing. Like, I don't really like the idea of nobody you coming in here and like, I always thought, like, what do we learn playing a game where we win by 20? But there's a methodology to it. And I'm going to have to adjust moving forward.
So that was before the game. And ultimately, like, that statement is now being used against him because, spoiler, we were going to get to it. They lost by 2 points to Michigan Tech. So
Michigan. Nobody you or whatever he called
him. So that's why he's getting crushed and he should. But his actual, like, that 23-second clip we just played, it actually makes some sense, you know, that what he was trying to get across about getting people into the stands and all that. The problem is that Wisconsin Green Bay, dude, you're not at Oklahoma State like you wish you were, head coach. You're not at North Carolina. Wisconsin Green Bay is what everybody else kind of considers random school as well. You're not,
like,
you know,
if they were,
like,
coming to Kansas, that's not filling up Allen Fieldhouse. Gold, if you got offered free tickets to Wisconsin Green Bay, you'd be like, maybe. Right?
Yeah, not a game that excites you to go to the Fieldhouse and watch. So that's like Wisconsin Green Bay. Who the hell do you think you are? Basically, is what I would say. What's their record now? I mean, Doug Gottlieb,
0-7 in conference play.
2-13, I think.
They are
from the screenshot, at least.
Yeah. I think they were 2-12 heading into the game, maybe. They're 11th in Horizon League play. They're winless. I know it's year one and it takes time to build a program, but, like, you know, making comments like that and then you lose 24 hours later to Michigan Tech. The only part I'll defend Doug Gottlieb on is I think some people, this is where people get lazy. They just read a headline and they don't actually look at the details. So Awful Announcing put out a tweet yesterday that Doug Gottlieb takes radio show off at following loss, like, because, you know, he does the national show and people are like, oh, what a loser. You didn't do your show because you were mad you lost. That was the headline. It was already scheduled off because they played an hour before his show was supposed to start. So he wasn't going to end the game, do a post game press conference, and then race to go do his show 30 minutes later. It was already scheduled off, but people pushed out there like he basically was like pouting and didn't do his radio show. I'll defend Gottlieb on that. He already said he wasn't doing his radio show before the game result ever happened.
Look, they were a terrible franchise there for a number of years. I looked it up. They had 8 wins, 5 wins, 3 wins, but then 18 last year, and he took them over. Now they're 2-11 right now. So they're real bad. I'd feel worse about people mocking him for that if he was more likable. Like, can we just, like, likability index on Doug Gottlieb?
I got you.
Very low.
Yeah.
Basement levels. Completely unlikable figure. You don't get to call somebody nobody you lose at home
when you're kind of nobody
and,
you.
Yeah, yeah, and then not get buried. This is life. And this is the whole problem. Like, the idea that somebody could do, like, this is the same as if I hosted this 4-hour show every day and I also coached UMKC. Do you realize how poorly that would go? Like, I can't coach UMKC and do this job. Like, that's impossible. I can't coach UMKC at all.
Instead, you're teaching the youth of America.
That's different.
Professor Tapp at UMKC.
That's only one class.
What the heck's supposed to happen when the Super Bowl comes up and he's supposed to be on Radio Row while also coaching Green Bay?
He won't be on Radio Row. Mm.
Someone says there's a Raytown kid that's in Wisconsin Green Bay. I'm going to suggest something to him real quick. Transfer. Come play at UMKC. Yeah. Transfer. Get the hell out. Transfer. Jeez. I'll figure out a way to get you some NIL money at UMKC if you transfer.
You should be making promises like that.
I'm telling you right now, I promise this kid. Oh, I will find him $2,000 from a local business with a UMKC grad to pay him to play at UMKC instead of Wisconsin Green Bay. I promise this kid, if he will leave this school, to Raytown, and then come to, I will find him that money. I will find him an NIL deal.
The text said there, read the text again, though. He's not currently there, I don't believe. There was a kid from Raytown that I went to. I don't think he's actually there, now.
Smart.
I don't think he's there now.
He might have been really good, actually, with that 18-win team and decided to bounce.
Wherever his coach went, I'm assuming his coach went somebody else. Did that coach like get a better job?
I guess they were without their best player. Green Bay, the Phoenix of Green Bay, were against.
He called him nobody. You should be able to beat nobody with your bench.
I agree.
No, again, same problem.
Mm-hmm. You're promising NIL deals. You said promise like three times.
Cody got rejected from the NIL program at UMKC. He tried to apply on behalf of our show to support them.
You actually got rejected. I know you hadn't heard back.
He said that dude's in his mid-30s.
He does not go there anymore. Okay. I double-checked on the roster. There's nobody from the KC area on Green Bay Phoenix.
I was ready to help that kid out. He's probably in the good teams. Or the really bad teams. I don't know.
Someone says his name was Ryan Pearson. Okay. Shout out to him.
Hope you're doing well, Ryan.
Yeah.
Sorry I can't get you any money now. You were before the NIL time.
You promised him.
I said if you transferred.
Now you're just promising anybody. Hey, Coleman Hawkins, leave K-State and come to UMKC, please.
I can't promise that kind of money. Mm-hmm. Didn't he get like $1 million to play at K-State?
$2 million.
Leave
Illinois. Mm-hmm.
All that whole thing.
They overpaid.
They did, but also... Jerome Tang is wrong in this entire concept of like NIL puts more pressure on him. Good. They're paying for $2 million. It's a professional sport. They should have pressure on them.
You cannot.
Like that's life. I don't know what to say. Every player in college basketball.
You cannot beg for NIL support from your fan base or university athletic department. Go and spend said money. And then when things aren't working out for a variety of reasons, blame it on, there's just more pressure now with this NIL stuff and managing it. That's where college basketball is at, man. That's where it's at.
Yeah, do you want to coach college basketball or you don't? Like, other people have left. No one's making Jerome Tang stay in college basketball or coach. Like, anybody who comes in here, like, Dabo did the same thing there for a while. It's just like, you can either play the game or not, but this is the game. Do you want to play it? That would be like, Gold, I don't like doing 4 hours of radio. I want to do two. Well, we do four. Like, do you want the job or do you not? You don't get to change the rules based on what you would like to be different.
Coming up next, we'll talk more about Chiefs Texans on Saturday and what we're hoping to see. And there's a solution out there to fix Major League Baseball, and I'm not sold on it one bit.